The Colorado Inn and KFKA present Rams Weekly with Kevin Lytle and Brady Hull.
We got all the kinks worked out, ready to go, Kevin. How about that? That intro
it's
there.
Weekly Rams Weekly.
It's here we weekly. Go. This show airs weekly.
Love it. It's
although,
great.
Although it does air again on Saturdays. So
multiple times a week, weekly Rams Weekly.
Rams Weekly a couple times a week. That's, I mean, we
what
like
more
to,
could you want, really?
We like to overcomplicate things a little bit. But yes, welcome into Rams Weekly, second episode of the, I guess, still the preseason, because next week we actually get into game week, but it kind of feels like CSU's in that transition of making it kind of a game week now.
Yeah, totally. Camp is officially over as far as CSU football is concerned. They called last Saturday's practice, scrimmage, whatever it was, kind of the end of camp. And so now it's sort of into game prep. Jay Norvell told me yesterday, we're not fully into Washington State, true game planning. The coaches certainly are, but not giving it to the team yet. He said he don't want to, give too much information to the team too early and almost peak too early. But, they're practicing. They're into their two deep. They have a scout team and, the two deep, the guys who will really see the field. So it really is game preparation now. And even, some of the guys, I talked to Chiggy in Newseum the other day, and he said, camp, especially for, a guy like him, a veteran, is a lot of fine-tuning some things, adding layers to their game. Whereas now it's kind of all in on preparing yourself mentally and physically for Saturday, September 2nd.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big game, and that Washington State game, it just becomes bigger and bigger, too, because with all the news around college football and where Stanford might go, where Cal might go, and where Oregon State and Washington State might go, we could be seeing CSU-Washington State maybe on a yearly basis.
How about starting the season with the conference game?
It's a Mountain West game.
Unofficially, it kind of is. My best guess, it could all change, but I do think Washington State and CSU will be in the same conference this time next year. We'll see. I know we'll talk realignment more, but it is kind of funky. It definitely adds another layer. It's ironic because last year when CSU went up to Pullman, it was sort of the joke during that game. Both, CSU people in the traveling party, CSU fans were saying it to Washington State fans and were like, ha ha ha, we'll be in the same conference soon. And Washington State fans kind of shrugged and were like, haha, but you might be right.
but it's
kind of a joke at that point. Like, tinged with some reality. Like, people saw what could be happening, but still felt kind of far away. And now it may well be here. And, we're only, 9-10 days out? But it's possible that by the time kickoff happens, we might have more news. It might be more official than we're even discussing right now. Who knows? I'm not breaking any news there, but this stuff has to move quickly. So, it is ironic how, literally a year later, it's like, this might be a possibility. So, the players and coaches won't really care. It doesn't affect them right now. They're aware of it. But certainly from a bigger, talking point, it is an element to this game.
Well, and Kevin, don't you think, too, like, Washington State and Oregon State, aren't they the best of what's left in the Pac-4? I mean, could you make, Stanford,
wise,
I know,
yeah.
but
yeah, football-wise. Yeah.
And Oregon State's on the move, football-wise, especially.
Oregon State's the top 25 team.
Yeah,
they should
they
be really good this year. They just, did some rebuilding of their stadium. It's supposed to be really nice. So, football-wise, I think there's no doubt that Oregon State and Washington State are better than Cal and Stanford. And if you can add them to your conference, again, football-wise, that's a big gain. Obviously, the other sports are different. Stanford is obviously the premier Olympic sport school in the entire country. And that is, in a lot of ways, that's what's one of the things that's complicating these realignment discussions. But football-wise, Washington State was solid last year. I think they'll be solid again this year. This is a really, good program coming into Fort Collins next week.
So what would you call the Mountain West Conference as far as, is it a group of five? Is it a group of six? Is it a power five? Or is it somewhere in between if they get those two teams?
Yeah, I mean, so let's just say Cal and Stanford do go to the ACC, which is the talk right now. Again, that that can change quickly. And the Mountain West adds those Northwest schools. If the Bay Area goes to the ACC, then it basically is going to come down to the American and the Mountain West duking it out to be the fifth best conference, because the Pac would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So your Power Five is down to four. And pretty clearly at that point, you know, SEC, Big Ten are your top two. Then it goes Big 12, ACC. But then it's up to the Mountain West or the American to be that fifth best. Is it a Power Five? No, you know, none, you know, the way we all think of it right now. But I think whoever wins that battle and gets Oregon State and Washington State and maybe poaches from the other league. You know, there's a whole Gonzaga St. Mary's discussion to be had, but those two conferences will be duking it out for, you know, number five or number one of the non-power conferences, however you want to frame it.
Yeah, it's you know, whether you're for all this stuff or against all this stuff, it's certainly entertaining, to say the least, to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. There are obviously a million arguments for why it's not good for college athletics, but I also strongly argue that the demise of college, you know, football interest is greatly exaggerated. Mm. I mean, people are fascinated. Yeah, it's possible, you know, some people could start to tune out as, you know, regional rivalries are, you know, ripped away and things like that. But certainly right now as it's happening, people are very interested. I mean, shoot, I can look at story metrics. People want to, you know, absorb all this and figure out what's happening. So at least at the now, it's very fascinating. Would it be bad down the road? That's also very possible.
And you put together a great piece up at the Coloradoan, coloradoan.com, talking about what that would mean for the Mountain West potentially with this movement, with what could potentially happen with Cal and Stanford. So I do strongly suggest folks check that out. That's a great read. And we'll get into it a little bit more in the program. But yeah, we are getting dangerously close to game week. And like you said, the coaches, the players, they can think about it all they want, but it's out of their hands. They have to try to put their best foot forward, find a way to have a productive season. And Jay Norvell, if history tells us anything, his short history, but with Nevada, year one, kind of rough, yeah, as to be expected. 3 wins. Year two, 8 wins. Year one with CSU, as to, I suppose, to be expected. 3 wins. Does he wash, rinse, repeat? Does he do the same thing with CSU? 8 wins seems like a lot compared to where they were last year, but who knows?
8 feels like a lot, but a jump of sorts, I think, is definitely, I think, on the cards for sure. How much is still to be debated. But I think this staff and team is kind of quietly confident. That's the vibe I'm getting of, you know, they're not going to come out and making outrageous statements. You know, they're not dumb. They know they went 3-9 last year and the program has been losing for a while. So they're not going to come out and say, we'll see you in the playoff or anything like that. But I think there is quiet confidence. And, you know, this time last year, Jay Norvell's pretty open. He didn't anticipate all the defections necessarily that came in the first, you know, month of the season. But before the first game, he was saying, I don't know what we're going to be until we get on the field. You know, there's just so much uncertainty. Yeah. I've asked him how that feel is this year. He says, yeah, I mean, there's always some uncertainty, but they're a lot more comfortable and confident in what they have because it's a roster built in their vision. Doesn't mean it's perfect yet. Doesn't have all the pieces. Doesn't have the depth. But it's mostly guys they brought in, you know, that fit the system, want to be in the system, and they just feel a lot more confident in knowing what they have as a roster. Again, there are question marks and such, but I think they're a lot more comfortable with this team than they were a year ago.
I think we're all just ready to see what happens on the field because we've all said it a million times over. Well, if that offensive line gets fixed up, then Clay Millen's going to be able to do more. They have the weapons and all that, that we like the defense, but it all comes back to that offensive line. And, you know, you're at practice every single day. Do you notice anything with this other than Jacob Gardner, pretty much new and improved offensive line? So we're told. Do you see anything? I mean, anything that would lead you to believe, yeah, I believe in the hype about this line?
I just have to see it. I mean, I do think it's improved. I have some confidence talking to the O linemen. They certainly feel better about it. But you have to see it after what happened last year. You just have to see it. I mean, I like, you know, it's basically built on guys from lower levels coming up to prove themselves. So they've played a lot of games. I like that. You know, rather, line's just a hard place for young guys to play. Like, yeah, you want to grow and develop them, but you know, that's a position where, you know, freshmen, you know, it's tough to play. So you have a lot of guys with a lot of experience, and then they have chip on their shoulder of, you know, they were D2 or FCS level, proving that they can play here. And then also, you know, I was talking to Oliver Jervis and Drew Cannon. They said, you know, we weren't on that team last year, but we still wear, you know, those stats, you know, as a, you know, mark against us. And we want to prove that wrong. You know, Oliver Jervis, I love the quote from him. It was basically, those weren't our numbers, but they're our name as, you know, the CSU offensive line. We want to fix that and change that. And Oliver Jervis said, you know, we know we're the question mark. I promise you, we're going to leave the season as the exclamation point.
I mean, you'll love to hear it.
Yeah. Again, it's, you know, that's talk right now before games, but I like the mindset. It seems, I guess I appreciate those guys coming in, not trying to deflect away of like, well, we weren't on that team, so it's not our problem. We didn't give up the sacks. They're kind of saying, yeah, we understand that all these fans are wary of it. We get that. So we're gonna, you know, we're gonna prove to you that we're better.
Kevin Lytle and myself here every single week, we're doing Rams Weekly for you, breaking down game by game coverage, things like that. A question I have for you on the other side. Well, I'll ask it now, Kevin. You answered on the other side. The captain situation. We got six captains that were named. A couple of questions that go into my brain when we see that announcement. Number one, was it team voted or was it Jay Norvell? I want to get that. And then, is there any concern that your quarterback is not listed as a captain? Let's talk about that on the other side. It's Rams Weekly here, presented by the Coloradoan, and of course here at KFKA, or Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Welcome back into Rams Weekly here on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. I join forces every single week with the Kevin Lytle of the Coloradoan, the best Rams insider there is. He's at every practice. He's at every game. He's traveling. You are there, Kevin. You're the guy in the know. And so, of course, if you're looking for that Rams coverage that you're not going to get anywhere else, the Coloradoan's going to be that outlet for you. And then we'll come in. We're fine coming in second here. Yeah, we're fine with that. We're good because we get to connect with you.
That's what teamwork is for.
That puts us in that conversation, I think. We got captains announced last week. We got Dallin Holker, the new tight end. We've got Jacob Gardner, Mo Kamara, Torrey Horton, Henry Blackburn, Jack Howell. All those names make perfect sense. We've talked about, like, those are big-time players. As Tanner would say, they have that dog in them or whatever. First question for you, Kevin. Was this a team vote on captains, or was this just Jay Norvell naming his captains?
Yeah, Jay does the player vote, so it's a player vote. I don't know the exact process, you know, if you have six slots and you name them, or exactly how that works, but yeah, it's a player-voted process.
Is there any concern that the quarterback is not the captain of this team?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. You know, I got that on Twitter, you know, when this came out. I don't think necessarily concern is the right word. I think it's semi-notable. What I would say, quarterback has to be a leader. That doesn't necessarily mean has to be a captain. Clay is still a young player. You know, if you look at all those other guys, they're old in both age
sure.
and games played. And Dallin Holker, you know, he's what, like 25 or something. He's, you know, very experienced. He's married.
Yeah.
So I don't think concerned. Clay does have to be a leader, but you can be a leader without being a captain. I've heard that he has stepped up, you know, kind of the vocal leadership game, if you will, you know, in the locker room and on the field. So as long as, you know, that's happy and players respect it, that's totally fine. You know, I mentioned Oliver Jervis, you know, the other day, and he is a leader. He's not one of the named captains, but everyone looks to him as a leader. You know, Chiggy Anuzium is probably another guy, not a captain, but a leader. So you can have other leaders. You have to have other leaders. I would say more, it's a good sign that there are more guys that can kind of qualify for that. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting note. Something to sort of have in the back of your mind, but I don't think concern.
With Clay, and you know this, I'm a big Clay Millen fan, get to catch up with him every week for the Clay Millen show on Tuesdays here at KFKA. But I'm going to say it. He's an awesome guy. He's fun to talk to. He's really great. He is the first guy to tell you that, no, that's on me, not them. And so I look at that as 100% positive. I would see some fans out there wondering, does he have that that nasty side. You know, we talk about Peyton Manning, the sheriff, those guys that would be like, if you mess up your route, it's not coming your way ever again. Does Clay Millen have any of that?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point and a fair point. Because, yeah, I think quarterback does have to be the bad guy. No, I don't want to say a bad guy, but you know what I mean. I think
kind of got to be a coach on the field,
that,
right?
You know, if guys are poorly executing whatever it is, you know, a bad snap or, keep missing an assignment, whether it's a route or a block, whatever, you might need to get in their face and in different words, sure. Say, gosh darn, we need to get this right.
Yeah, you could Philip Rivers it. You don't have to curse.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and again, everyone has to have their own style. So you can't, you know, absorb someone else's and be someone you're not. But yeah, I think that's a good example of Peyton Manning. Like, all his teammates always say, he's very hard. And, you know, there are the clips of, you know, I think, darn it, Donald, when his left tackle with the Colts missed a block.
Oh,
literally
yeah.
In the middle of play, he's yelling at him. I'm not saying that's what you should do. Again, you have to have your own style. But I do think every now and then, you probably have to have that fire of, this is not good enough. We need to fix it right now. No excuses. Figure your S out.
Well, and Clay's still young, I guess, yeah. Right? I mean, last year was his first year starting and yeah. All that stuff. But he's still a pretty young guy. So you could maybe see that develop more this year.
Yeah, I think guys, you know, often as they get more comfortable, we'll figure out the way to do that again, their right style. So, again, we'll see. I think it is a fair thing to wonder and watch for because, yeah, you do need to, you know, it's a high-level position that, you know, needs high-level play and high-level leadership and high-level standard of excellence, I guess, because if your quarterback kind of just lets everything slide, your offense isn't going to be good.
Yeah, and there was just something, and again, I don't think it's a big deal. It's just, I notice it. Clay might be that kind of quarterback that is really good, but he's very polite about it.
Yeah.
One of the plays at the second scrimmage last week, he ran in, I think a broken play, but he ended up rolling out to the right, runs into the end zone. And I heard him say to Jack Howell, he goes, hey, nice job, Jack. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And we were right there. That was funny.
And then we hear Jack, you know, it was so nice, too. It's just like, hey, man, nice job. And then we hear Jack in the press conference later that's like, I want to talk trash and I want to get after people. So I'm trying to stay optimistic here and say maybe Clay's just going to be one of those guys that, you know, kills you with kindness. He's good, but he just doesn't have that
so
edge.
So remember the stories about Andrew Luck, who obviously is a very good quarterback, you know, retired early. He was, you know, one of those nice guys. There are all the stories of, you know, you would hit him or sack him, and he'd say, oh, great play. You know,
yes,
you
yes.
Know, great. I don't know if he ever played Aaron Donald, but, you know, that idea. Oh. Great play, Aaron Donald. Like, you know, really appreciate, you know, good hustle. You know, that was a cool move. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I mean, it does exist.
You
don't have
to
be the screamer. But, yeah, you have to have your own style. And what I'm interested in, Clay, not just in this leadership aspect, but also just play overall, I could see a way where early in the season doesn't look great, you know, looks like last year, as he gains comfort in that O-line. Let's say the O-line is much better, which it has to be. I could see a way where he's probably still a little jittery from last year and, you know, maybe not fully comfortable and confident, but see that grow during the season if the line is better and he realizes, like, oh, like I can just unleash and be that quarterback that I'm supposed to be. So, you know, he does need to take a step forward this year. There's a very important season, but I could also see a way that game five looks a lot different than game one.
Yeah, I tend to agree. We might not see fireworks right off the bat with this. You're trying to figure everybody out.
I do think it'd be important. I think we mentioned this before. Man, if he could have a big early game, whether it's Washington State, CU, even Middle Tennessee, you know, drop a 330, three touchdown type of game, I think that would do wonders for him and the offense as a whole.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, I have this one. This was big news that you put out this week, Kevin, on the running back side of things. Avery Morrow is going to play. He's good. We're cleared as of now.
Yeah, so we've been kind of waiting for this. There are just so many fingers to this whole thing. You know, obviously, Avery was arrested in January. It's been working through the legal system. He's had a bunch of hearings. Nothing has... I mean, obviously, it's part of the process, but no resolution has come from those. Right now, it's scheduled for trial. He has a motions hearing Friday, which, you know, generally those aren't much, but we'll see. But he also, concurrently, was going through – there's basically a school review process, you know, for the school, the university to determine, are you in good standing as a student? You know, so he was suspended through spring from the team. That lifted sometime during summer, is roughly a six-month suspension. and then go through the school process. He had a hearing for that about a week and a half ago. And that's kind of what CSU, the football team, had to wait on. You know, if that board or whatever you would call it, you know, ruled him ineligible to play, the football team would have no say. That, you know, they can't override that. But basically, they put him in good standing as a student, so, you know, he can go to class, everything, and represent the university in games. So he's basically now been deemed eligible to play. Trial date is still set for late November after CSU's final regular season game. We'll see if it reaches that point or if there's a resolution before. But that's where it's at right now. But from the football side, he is expected to play against Washington State in the backfield. He's been practicing in preseason camp. So from the, again, pure logistical football fitness side, he's been practicing. So it's not like he's coming in from the cold. But yeah, Avery Morrow, you know, is now expected to play.
I guess part of my brain just almost put him out, wondering if I don't know if this is going to get resolved or whatever. So you add him with Kobe Johnson, and seems like this could be a pretty interesting backfield.
I think Kobe has been one of the winners of camp, and maybe, you know, it's just because we hadn't seen him before, but he looks really good, has some Dalen Dawkins vibes. Jay Norvell said yesterday he basically considers them co-ones. You know, I feel like Kobe will probably start, but that doesn't really matter. I think we'll probably see a little bit of, you know, just ride the hot hand, but that's a pretty good skill set and tandem those two have. KJ Edwards has had a decent camp. You know, a young guy like Damian Henderson might get in there in selective duty, but that looks like a pretty talented backfield now.
So you're going to put Kobe Johnson or Avery Morrow, and Adam Schefter's never seen that before.
Gonna be so confused.
He's going to be like, what does that
even
mean?
He won't understand what it means, because apparently he's never looked at a college depth chart.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. Well, that's good news on the backfield. We're hoping for the best, obviously, as more information comes out on this with Avery, but sounds like he's a go right now.
Yep,
so that's
he'll
good.
He'll be playing September 2nd.
All right, Rams Weekly rolls on. Kevin put together kind of a position-by-position breakdown, and I love it. It's a cheat sheet for you as we can break into this and some of the strengths of this team, weaknesses, and so on. It's Rams Weekly on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFK. Welcome back into Rams Weekly. I'm Brady Hull, alongside Kevin Lytle of the Coloradoan, the Rams insider. For more information, check them out online at coloradoan.com. Or Kevin, they can follow you on Twitter. Throw that Twitter handle.
X.
Or X. Yeah. That's right. I won't ever get that.
I'm at Kevin _ Lytle on Twitter, X, whatever.
Twitter, X. It's an interesting thing, man. It takes me about 9 years before I can, like when stadiums change names and stuff, I don't call it that until like the new person comes in and buys it. Then I call it the old thing. It takes me about 5 years to register.
Yeah. Oh, those stadium name changes are brutal.
Oh, I think everybody has a hard time with the Broncos.
It's like, just Mile High.
It's Mile High. Some people are Invesco, Sports Authority.
I keep calling Ball Pepsi Center.
Pepsi Center.
Stuck in my head for
McNichols,
forever.
Even though it's not the same building, but still, you know, we can go there. Kevin, you broke down kind of just the breakdown by positions for this CSU roster. Obviously, we talked about the quarterback position. It's Clay's job to lose, and we'll see if he has a little bit of that fire in his belly, or does he need it? You know, I don't think that's a monster question going into it, but that's just something to pay attention to. The running back side of things, we talked about with Kobe Johnson and Avery Morrow. That, to me, was at least a pleasant surprise that we are going to see Avery Morrow suit up. So the running back situation should be pretty good. I still don't know how. I'm curious to see how they're going to use it. Avery Morrow was more out of necessity last year. They threw him some passes, but he ran the ball well. And suddenly the Rams were like ground and pound because they had to be. I'll be curious to see how they utilize it this year, assuming all things are going well with the offensive line.
Yeah, I still think they're going to lean on that run game a pretty decent bit. I don't think it's going to be, you know, full. I don't want to say, you know, not full air raid. Because they are going to pass plenty, but I think they've found, like, hey, we've got a thing going on here with the run game that can open up some other stuff, especially now with Holker and tight end and things. So I think we're going to see a pretty heavy dose of Kobe Johnson and Avery Morrow.
The tight end position could be a strength for this team. I know Torrey Horton's the man, and he'll be playing in the NFL, but the tight end position, and I talk a lot about Dallin Holker, but Vince Brown, that's another. You got two guys there that you might be able to really get some production out of.
Yeah, it's a big change. Tight ends only provided 21 receptions, it was, I think, last year, and it was multiple part. One, you know, Tanner Arkin, I think, is a very nice player, but different style offense, you know, player. He's at Illinois now. And they had to use tight ends, especially Tanner, as a blocker last year because the O-line was struggling. But now you have a guy like Dallin Holker that, I mean, the word is he is a clean, clean route runner, like maybe crisper routes than Trey McBride. Not saying he's the overall player that Trey is, but maybe a little crisper on the routes. He'll be good up the middle. He'll help open up that, you know, hopefully the deep passing game, you know, so a guy like Torrey doesn't always have a safety over top. And then Vince Brown, I think he's going to be sort of a seam threat, tall guy down the middle, maybe a red zone threat. So, yeah, I think it's a totally different look. I don't think it's outlandish to think the, you know, reception total for those tight ends will probably double or, you know, maybe even more this year because you have a very different look there. And I think Dallin Holker is going to be really, really important this
season. Imagine if you can get a guy, not that we're making that strong comparison, but you get a guy that has some positives like Trey McBride had, but you throw him into this kind of an offense where he's really utilized, that would be interesting to see. On the receiver side, obviously we know Torrey Horton, that guy is going to help, I think, bring the wide receiver you thing back, or he maybe already has. But Justice Ross Simmons, that's another name that we expect some fairly big things from.
Yeah, two young guys I'm really excited about. We know what Torrey is. He's great. He's an NFL player, whether it's this, you know, in a year from now or 2 years from now, which he's actually kind of hinted at. But Justice Ross Simmons really came on late last year, ended up just shy of 500 yards, really nice freshman year. He has all the talent in the world. Really, really high potential player. And then Lewis Brown, kind of a slot guy. He is shifty. He's had a really good preseason camp. His big thing last year was inconsistency, which is very normal for a freshman. Seems to be ironing some of that out. He's a guy that if you get him in open space, ooh, he's a nightmare tackle. So I'm really excited about him as well. I think he had a couple kind of highlight plays last year, but if you look at stats, it's like 90 yards, so not a ton of production. I think he can make a really big jump this year. I'm really excited to see him. And then you have another vet in Dylan Goffney from SMU who will come in and help. And then I want to mention Dawson Minigotti. He's a former walk-on Colorado kid. He just keeps forcing their hand. He had a great spring, and you can kind of say, well, it's spring. A lot of the new, the incoming freshman transfers aren't here yet. He's just taking advantage of his opportunity, which he was. But he's doing it again in camp. I mean, he's absolutely running with the number two. So, again, I'm not saying Dawson Minigotti is going to go have 1,000 yards, but I think he's a very relevant threat. Super speed guy. I'm very excited. These are the cool stories. The guy who literally just forced his way onto the field.
Yeah, I love that, too. Those are the ones you root for when they go at it. They bring it so much in practice and spring and fall that the coaches have no choice. They got to keep him around.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see him. I just find those fun. Again, he's not going to be your team MVP, but it's pretty cool.
Well, we talked a little bit about the offensive line earlier, so we'll get into the defensive side of the ball. This is where I think fans, this is the known entity, right? We know a lot of these guys are superstars. And let's start with that safety position. Obviously, we know we got Jack Howell, we got Henry Blackburn, we got Aiden Hector. I mean, those potentially are three of the best safeties in the conference.
Yeah, I think as a starting group, that's your best unit on the team. Those three, Howell and Hector, had three interceptions each. I think that group is really good. I think they need to be, a key part of causing turnovers this year. I think they will. It's a good mix. Aiden Hector, can get up and tackle. He can cover a lot of different positions. He's obviously got a sense for the ball. Henry Blackburn plays, kind of that deep, over the top type guy. And then Howell, again, is pretty versatile. He can come up in the run game and make a play, or he can cover. I think that as a starting group is your best position on
the team. I think they're going to do some big things this year. Hopefully so. But then the cornerback position, you brought up Chiggy as well. We expect him to be a stud. I know Rams fans were they rejoiced when they found out he was going to stick with CSU.
Yep, that was huge news. He's a long athletic corner again. I think NFL potential. I talked to him the other day, and he said the next thing for I got to get the ball. He goes, I need my hands on the ball. Didn't have any interceptions last year. Part of that was teams threw away from him a lot because CSU didn't have much cornerback depth. I think that's improved now. They're probably going to have to throw at him some. But I'm excited about him. I think he has a chance to be really good. And that depth, Dom Jones, he's been battling a little bit of an injury here, so we'll see if he's ready to go game one. But he's another lanky corner, and one of the North Dakota State guys, has a lot of experience. I think a good compliment. And then I think they have some other pieces. Ron Harge, Oregon State guy, comes in. So you have more depth there at corner. So it's a position I'm feeling pretty solid about.
Kevin, is this more – because the defense was – as the season progressed, they got better and better. But it was more of they just made stops. They made stops. I know now they're looking at how do we have those game-changing plays where we get that pick, maybe a pick six. We, you know, sack a quarterback, force a fumble, and we make something happen there.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the next step. If you look at Jay Norvell's last Nevada team, you know, which was quite good, they had 20-something turnovers forced. And I think that's what they're looking to do is, you know, be one of the top teams in turnovers forced. And that will probably put this team in good shape. I mean, I think this is the best defense Jay Norvell will have, you know, ever had as a head coach.
I think all the units are exciting to talk about, but maybe perhaps if we can say weakness, are we looking at the linebacking position as being
I think it's the biggest question mark, not necessarily as a knock on those players, but there's so much change. I mean, obviously, Daquan Jackson, Cameron Carter were the starters for 100 years. They're gone. Drew Kulik played a lot last year. He's gone. He had to medically retire. So it's almost all new. Chase Wilson, we did see some last year. He had a great game in the finale against New Mexico. He's sort of your locked-in star. He's another one of those guys I should have mentioned as a leader who isn't a captain. Players really respect him. But then, you know, who's next to him? Right now, I have Jasim Mitchell as the starter. I think he's probably going to start. I think most people thought it'd be Trey Mejia Pastor, the Cal transfer. I think he'll be on the field a lot. But I think Jasim has maybe won that job. And then I also want to highlight Boom Jock, a freshman. We'll see how much he plays this year. He's certainly one to watch for the future. They're really excited about him. And it seems like every week in camp, he's sort of inched his way up the depth chart a little bit. So I think they have potential to do what they need to do. It's just kind of an unknown because none of those guys have played a ton of time at CSU.
Well, with the great safeties, the solid corners, and then the defensive line should be pretty good too. Of course, Mo Kamara, man, we're expecting some big things from him.
You know, I said the safeties are probably the best starting group. I think the D-line is the deepest group on the team. Mo has an argument as the best player on the team, including Torrey Horton. It's probably Torrey, but Mo's pretty darn good. And then you have guys Cam Baratow, Grady Kelly, veterans kind of in the middle. And then they have a ton of depth. Tony Pierce, North Dakota State, he'll roll in. Matt Thomas, Rhode Island, he'll roll in. Mukindi Wakalanji had some big plays last year. James Mitchell has played a lot. Tyler Quinn has some game reps. And then a guy who's probably going to start, Newer Gatkuth, young player, redshirt freshman. He's one of these long, lanky, athletic ends. He might be a nice compliment to Mo Kamara. So I think it's just a really deep group. They'll play a ton of guys. And, you know, we were talking about that secondary. No one loves a good D-line more than secondary guys. And you talk to the secondary, and they're really excited about the D-line. That's always a good sign. They think, you know, they're going to be some game wreckers up front. So that, like I say, I think that's the deepest group on the team.
You put pressure on a quarterback, whether you get the sack or not, typically good things happen for your defense.
Yep. And they should stay fresh. I mean, there's a lot of guys they can roll in there.
We'll take a quick break here from Rams Weekly. When we come back, I will quickly ask you about special teams. We can't ignore special teams. We can't.
Kickers,
Jay Norvell's
kickers
not.
Kickers are people, too.
Yeah, Steve Adazio ignored special teams. We're not ignoring special teams. We're not going to do that. Well, maybe
they even have a special teams coach.
Yeah, maybe he didn't ignore it because he was, okay. We'll get to that, and then we'll wrap up more about conference realignment, whatever we're calling it now, and what that means potentially for the Mountain West. It's Rams Weekly on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFK. Welcome back into Rams Weekly here on Northern Colorado's Voice. I'm Brady Hull alongside Kevin Lytle of the Coloradoan. And Kevin and I were breaking down from his article available at coloradoan.com. It's a full breakdown in depth of position by position. So great information there for you. We were wrapping up here with the special teams. We can't ignore it. We know Patty Turner's going to be punting the ball. We do know that.
Yep, that's locked in, always has been. There's never been doubt Patty's going to be the guy.
He's a fun guy, isn't he?
Yeah, I really like Patty. I know he kind of became a lightning rod for some fans because it looks a lot different than what Ryan Stonehouse did. And obviously, Patty did struggle early last season. But the directional kicking is what they want to do, limit punt returns allowed. CSU is one of the top teams in the nation and fewest returns allowed. So it's working, and I think he'll be better, too, you know, overall with the kicking this year. But yeah, Patty is locked in.
How about the kicking side of the
This is a big one. You know, CSU has struggled at kicking for a while. I mean, I know Caden Camper set the single season record, but that was all on short kicks when the brilliant Steve Adazio offense stalled out at the half-yard line. Caden, you know, he struggled, you know, further out. CSU really hasn't been consistent from, you know, middle ranges for a while. You know, they had pretty limited range last year. Jordan Noyes comes in, one of the oldest players in college football. He's 31 or 32, has three kids from England.
Wow.
Pretty cool background there, you know, very unique. He was at Utah, pretty limited at Utah. I think he only had 12 field goal attempts, but in practice, strong leg, certainly expands the range. Has been good in camp. You know, again, camp kicking is different than game kicking, but at least, you know, he does at least open up potential for range. We'll see. You know, that's sort of a to be determined on how successful he is.
31 years old, that gives us hope for going back and playing.
I said to him, I was like, I mean, I guess in one, you know, it gives some perspective. Like, yeah, you want to make the kicks, but it's not like you're thinking it's the most important thing in the world when you have kids at home. You know, gives you some pretty good perspective on things. He's like, yeah, it definitely does. Like, obviously want to and then focus on it, but also not rattled by it. Because if you got three kids, a kick is, you know, You've dealt with worse.
You're under pressure all the time. So kicking a field goal, man, that's nothing. And then finally on the returning side, kick return, punt return. Horton's going to be the punt returner, is that right?
Yeah, so Norvell is big on starters playing special teams. He says, we want to win special teams and win them significantly. So it's not just Horton, you know, on defense units, if you will, you know, punt, kick, stuff like that. You're going to see a lot of starters out there. Torrey will be returning punts. He had the fumble against Wyoming, which was just a brutal way for CSU to kind of lose that game. But he's the best in the league. I mean, he's electric back there. Did he have one last year? It seems like every time he gets one of those, he's on the verge of breaking. So he's a game breaker back there. I think he's easily the best punt returner in the league.
I think you're right. I think he's a playmaker, and you want him. You know, you're trying to win games right now. CSU's trying to find some positives. And
Norvell has that. I forget. Exactly, but basically when he said when we win special teams, we win, I think it's like 80-some% of the games. So that's why he thinks that there are coaches that, you know, kind of put backups in. He says we're going to take advantage of that. We're going to beat them.
Well, on the kick return side of things, we see touchbacks all the time, so does it matter? But Torrey's not going to be returning the kicks,
correct.
Is that right?
So, I mean, I don't want to dismiss kick return because it can be important, but especially half your games in Fort Collins. Between touchbacks and then the ability to fair catch if a team does, you know, kind of lob one, you just see fewer. But it is important. You can't fumble them, most importantly. And that'll probably be down to the running backs. It looks like that'll be Kobe Johnson. Avery Morrow did it some last year. So I think it'll mostly be those two guys. I could see a situation late in a game. You need a big return. Put Torrey Horton back there. See if he can make magic happen. But I think mostly it'll be the running back group responsible for that.
Well, for more on that, more in-depth details there for you, check out coloradoan.com. Go to the sports tab, find CSU information. You'll find that story quickly down the line there. All right, so what we're talking about here with conference realignment and all of that, have you heard anything on your – because it seems like it's ramping back
whispers,
up again.
Yeah.
Slowed down the last 2 weeks. Now it's ramping back up that potentially Oregon State and Washington State could be with the Mountain West Conference.
Yeah, definitely whispers. You know, Gloria Navarez has been pretty open of, hey, Oregon State, Washington State, we're ready for you. You know, whenever you're ready, come on in. We got you. everyone's been waiting on Cal and Stanford. That is kind of the thing that has to happen. It's maybe getting close. The national reports seem to suggest that the ACC might figure out a way to add them. And then it'll come down to, does the Mountain West get Oregon State, Washington State, or does the American make a power play to not only get them, but also maybe grab a couple Mountain West teams and really kneecap the Mountain West? Does the Mountain West do the same, try the same thing in reverse of get the Northwest and kneecap the American by taking a couple there? I think all those are in play. I think it's going to be a fascinating couple weeks. And like I said earlier, I think we're going to find out soon. Right now, if I had to guess, best guess is Cal, Stanford do go to the ACC, SMU goes to the ACC, Mountain West gets Washington State, Oregon State, and those additions there. That's because it's the most logical thing, but sort of.
Whatever logic is there means. Logic anymore?
Certainly, yeah. The Mountain West is the best fit in a lot of ways for Oregon State, Washington State. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's a guarantee, as we've seen with all these other moves. But, if you made me pick one, that's the most likely. That feels most likely, but far from a certainty. I'm not putting that at 90%. Yeah. I'm putting that at 40%. The others at 20%, something like that.
I tell you, though, in all this mess, if that's what happens, and Oregon State, Washington State are now Mount West teams, we're going to look at this thing and go, wow, how did the Mountain West get stronger from this situation?
Because Mountain West was almost in real trouble.
Yeah, San Diego State was gone. Yeah.
There's talk of the Pac-12 poaching a couple. The Mountain West would be almost dead. So that's possible. And Gloria Navarez has said, we're talking to our TV partners of, hey, how are we going to renegotiate this based on potential additions? And then the one sort of hypothetical that I mentioned, I mentioned multiple hypotheticals, but I was like, hey, go call Gonzaga and St. Mary's too.
Give them a buzz. It's worth giving a shot. All right, Kevin, next week we get into game week.
Predictions next week.
Game predictions. We'll break down Washington State. What do we know about that team?
48 hours out. This is amazing.
Oh,
We're
almost there. All right, that's going to do it for us. It's been Rams Weekly on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.